If you're listening to this, could you please hit the follow or subscribe button? It helps us as a podcast more than you know, and we can reach a lot more farmers right across Australia. G'day and welcome to the Farms Vice podcast with your host, Jack Creswell. Whether you farm it, service it, or just love it, this podcast is for you. We'll bring you the techniques and technologies you can implement into your day straight from the leaders and innovators themselves. Spread the Farms Vice so that we can reach more farmers right across Australia. Follow us on all of your socials at Farms Vice and let's get into this episode. Welcome back to the Beyond the Record Keeping series with the team at Ag World. It's been a cracking episode so far. We started off with CEO Michael Gilbert all the way from Vancouver, Canada. And our last episode was with Tina Smith. He's with Macadamia Farm Management and really seeing how Ag World can play a part in their farm. So in this series, you'll see how they came to adopt the technology, how they're collecting different data points, and how they're record keeping to ensure that they can make a bit better decisions off the back of that data anyway. So don't listen to me, listen to the experts out in the paddocks and see how they go. But on today's episode, we've got a cracking guest with Michael Nichols as we dive into what I believe is our very first farmer from Tasmania. Always great to have a farmer on. Talking Farms Vice and passing a little bit on to you as well. So let's get into this episode. Michael Nichols, bloody good to have you on to the Farms Vice podcast on behalf of the Ag World series. Great to have a farmer from Tassie. I think we've had one from King Island, but not Tasmania itself. So thanks for coming on.
Yeah, no, you're welcome. Thank you very much.
Beautiful, mate. So how's the weather down there at the moment? Quite wet, dry. What's it looking?
It has been incredibly dry, but we've just had our first 50 mils of rain, which you might go, oh, that's nice, but we're probably 200 mils behind where we normally would be. Our average rainfall is about 1250 mils a year. So last year we only got about 850, so it was a dry one.
Pretty surreal just to even be talking about 1250. That's on average, isn't it, 1250?
Yeah, it's on average. Yep.
What do you do when you go over?
Try and keep away from the paddocks because it's bloody wet.
Yeah, my word. Well, mate, good to hear that you're having a pretty good season, and you gave me a quick little tour before of what's happening on your farm. So thanks for that. Let's dive into a little bit of agribusiness. But before that, tell us about your connection and like how you got to running your farm, owning it there, and what your background is.
Yeah, no, well, it started with my parents. They immigrated from the UK in 1982. I was born in 1983, so I'm Australian. Yep. They started off dairy farming, and then they moved to the farm we're on now, which is at Sisters Creek, which was a sort of a mixed cropping beef farm. Yep. My dad then started a poultry business as well as the farming operation. The poultry business has sort of grown and taken... His time is concentrating on that now, and that then gave me an opportunity to step in and start running our farm. We're on about 1,000 acres, but out of that 1,000 acres, there's only about 400 that's croppable. We've got quite undulating, steep red ground. It's all very fertile grade one agricultural land, which is nice. It's got a subsoil maybe down about a metre deep, I suppose, or a topsoil about a metre. So we're pretty blessed with that. It's all red sort of clay, so it holds moisture nicely. Our 400 acres is fully irrigated. And we also grow quite a range of different crops. So we grow potatoes, onions, wheat, pyrethrum, poppies, barley, canola, buckwheat. We were processing peas, but I don't think we'll be doing them this year. A bit of mustard as well for culinary use.
Yep.
So a bit of everything. And then we've also got some beef cattle on the outsides where it's quite steep and uncroppable. And we've also got a bit of pine plantation as well. And then there's about 250 acres of natural bush.
Yeah, right. So you're optimizing your place pretty efficiently from poultry to crops and having every grain cereal on the shop shelf.
Yeah, pretty well. It's all about keeping the rotation diverse so that way we don't end up with a buildup of different diseases in the soil. Trying to give our we've got about a 6-year rotation going on the place at the moment.
Yeah, you showed me before, didn't you, about your wheat crop that you had last season and you're going into potatoes now. Is that a decision based off what's going to help the potatoes thrive by the nutrients coming in, or how does that work?
Yeah, well, really, on the northwest of Tassie, potatoes are king.
Yep.
Everything else is well and truly second best. So everything basically revolves around the potatoes. And if you can get a stretch your rotation to about that 6-year mark, you'll certainly save building up things like powdery scab, rhizoctonia, all those like common scab. All those, pink rot's another one. They're the main diseases that can affect your potato yield and can mean whether you go processing, which means straight to the factory for chips, or you end up going storage. If you get storage, you also get a storage bonus, which is worth quite a few dollars. So the longer the rotation, the less disease you get, and the better your spuds will be. And then we fit everything else around. The rotation basically builds itself from there.
So who is it, you designing your crop program, seeing what you're going to work, rest paddocks, or whether you do or not? You can just put a crop in. You're two crops a year down there?
No, we're only one crop because we grow wind, like everything's obviously because we get the rainfall, we get quite a wet winter. So we grow winter wheat, winter canola, maybe winter barley, but we're finding that the spring barley is probably just as good as the winter barley. With less disease in it. But what we find is like typically our rotation will be potatoes followed by wheat because wheat can handle the ground being fairly compact after the potatoes and you can still bog a paddock of wheat in and still get your 10 ton.
Yep.
And then after the wheat, because the wheat has that drying period over the winter, the ground can crack open naturally and start to break some of that hard compaction up. Then we might follow that with, say, a poppy or a pyrethrum, then go on with an onion, and then we'll follow that with, say, a field pea. When I say field pea, that's like a simplot peas, which is green peas.
Yep.
So harvest green vine harvested, and we follow that with then buckwheat. So you sort of get your two crops in 1 year there. Yeah, but it just depends on what the season's doing and whether you can get things in at the right time in between weather events.
Yeah, 100%. And dealing with what you do on the amount of land that you have is pretty phenomenal. And it could go either way for how you treat your land. And it's come out the other end for yourself, winning the National Land Care Award.
Yeah, that's right. So there is quite a few different sort of land care awards. So our actual award was called the, I have to look at the writing because it's bloody a massive word, Australian Government in Innovation Land Management Award.
Yep.
So basically that just meant that, the reason we got that award was because we use grid sampling soil tests to do our soil testing. So we use a firm which is in Victoria, Precision Ag Victoria. They come down with their little buggy and do their thing. We've sort of custom made our grid samples now. So we now do two samples per hectare down to a 20 centimetre core instead of a 10. And we're testing our pH, calcium, magnesium, phosphorus and potash.
Yeah.
They're the main five that we're testing because then we can, with the pH, we can decide whether we put lime or dolomite on to get our calcium magnesium ratio right. And then we're obviously putting a lot of phosphorus on and potassium, especially in front of potatoes and onions.
Yeah.
So that's been working really well, doing that quite concentrated maps. Most of our paddocks would be sitting around the 8 to 10 hectares in size. So pretty small compared to what most people are used to. I know when I did the a couple of leaders programs and I caught up with a few broadacre guys, they couldn't believe that I'd be harvesting paddocks that might only be 2 or 3 hectares in size. And they said, well, that's normally your turnaround paddock or your truck stop paddock. Yeah, so that's sort of a little bit different. But yeah, so when we do the soil mapping and we get the map back, you wouldn't think there'd be such a variation over a farm that might have been cropped for maybe 70, 80 years with vegetables quite intensively. But we're still finding that every time we do it, we're saving money on our fertiliser application, after we put in the prescription map. Most of the time we'd get a traditional soil test done where an agronomist will walk across the paddock and do a W shape, grabbing a few samples and then combining it all in, and you just get a random number per paddock, which would sort of give you a bit of a rough idea. But now that we've gone down the precision line with the grid sampling, it's just chalk and cheese that we now know where the levels are high, where they're low. Traditionally, we'd be putting on, say, a ton of 0710, which is basically just potash and single super mixed together.
Yep.
You'd be putting a ton of that on as a pre-spread, and now that we've done this map, we might have areas that we put zero potash on, and we might then put 800 kilos of potash on in certain areas as well. So it's still quite variable. The other advantage we've got is we've only got one soil type.
Yep.
So it's all red basalt, but because we've got quite steep hills that we're farming on, a lot of our movements are all to do with where water's going to flow because of the topography. So when the gullies end up being quite nutrient rich, and the hillsides become quite barren.
Yep.
And by doing the variable rate, we've actually improving our yields in the gullies, because we'd find the gullies would either, say, rot out or get higher disease levels, or even septoria, or they'd get eye spot in wheat, and the crop would lodge really badly in there, in the gullies. And now we're finding that we're getting a nice even crop across the entire platform or across the entire paddock now.
Same in the gully as it is on the top of the hill now with your variable rate.
Yeah, it's we're getting a lot closer, and obviously we're also mapping the harvest, anything that's through the combine. So we have a Class Lexion combine, and that's what's doing a yield map as we go across. So before we were doing precision grid sampling, we're finding there was about a 40% variation across the paddocks, from the highest yield to the lowest.
Yep.
Once we started doing the grid sampling, we actually reduced that down to about a 20% variation. So we were getting a lot more concentrated towards the higher end of the scale, which I guess then led us into, entering a couple of things, competitions for wheat, barley and canola. And we actually still, at the moment, we still currently hold the Australian wheat record, which is 13.1 tonne to the hectare over our 16-hectare paddock. Which was basically put down to the grid sampling and being more efficient and more precise with our applications of fertilizer.
Yeah, it comes down to a lot of things, doesn't it? I'd imagine a few listeners on the podcast will be a bit jealous of your 13.1 ton to a hectare.
Yeah, no, it does come with different challenges. Ours is moisture.
Yep.
Moisture for us is a nightmare. If I had to deliver all of my wheat to the grain merchants at 12.5%. Out of the 3,000 ton I harvested this year, that'd probably only be 150 ton that would make the grade.
You're right.
Everything else
is going.
Well, it's more just aeration through our silos.
Yep.
They just that turns on when the humidity gets below 60%, which is a drying air. Then after that, and we find that by getting the air going through, we'll bring the grain down to 12.5 to a sellable level. But like I say, moisture, because we're only probably 4 or 5 kilometres from the ocean, plus the other problem is our grain size is around the 55 to 60 gram 1,000 grain weight, which is a very big grain, so therefore it takes extra long to dry out.
Yeah.
And with the coastal conditions, it's very hard to get the moisture down to that 12.5.
Yeah, I could imagine. Well, it sounds like there's a lot going on. Great to hear that you're close to the coast. It's pretty cool to be close as a farmer. Where we are, 5 hours away from the coast, it's quite good for yourself, I'd imagine. But like for yourself, that grid samples, how often are you actually taking samples to see whether you've improved nutrients? Is it before every crop, once a year?
Yeah, that's a good question. We've pretty well got it. So we're doing it in front of our potatoes and in front of our onions. So it seems to be every 3 to 4 years we're doing the paddock, mainly because they're our highest fertilizer user. So therefore I get my best bang for buck to reduce my fertilizer rates by using the highest input crops. And on average, what we've worked out over the last 5 years is on average we're saving around the $20,000 a year in fertilizer. Just by doing the prescriptions that we've been doing. And with the way that the bloody price is going up at the moment, I wouldn't be surprised if it's probably more like $40,000 for this coming season. Because fertilizer prices are just, you know, it's just phenomenal. I can't believe they've gone up as high as they have in such a short amount of time.
Yeah, it did skyrocket up there. It's held up there pretty well for a bit. I'm not sure about Tassie, but maybe is it more expensive down in Tassie because you get it from mainland?
I would say so. I know that I've only got a couple of current prices on some MAP, which was $1,600 a tonne.
Yep.
DAP was $1,650, and the urea was sitting at about $1,750.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, I think our urea is around $1,500 in like Dubbo area.
Yep.
So not too different for being down in Tasmania. But for yourself, like coming on to your farm and looking for where you can be more efficient, using ag tech to actually facilitate that, you've been using Ag World for your farm. How has that actually played a role in cutting your fertilizers or just managing your paddocks, both with yourself and your employees, your family? How has that actually worked out for you?
Yeah, so really it's more about just time management and planning, and that's where we've always had some sort of electronic record keeping. Yep. We were using a platform before this one, but the old one wasn't moving up with the new technology. It was all sort of more desktop based rather than actual on smart devices. And the other thing was we have around 5 different agronomists that come onto our property managing the different crops. Like poppies have one agronomist, pyrethrum have another agronomist, we've got the potato and onion agronomists, then we've got the cereal agronomist. Pardon?
What's pyrethrum?
Pyrethrum is it's like a daisy, and that's where they get pyrethroid from, which is in the fly spray. So it's like a natural fly spray.
Yep, very neat.
Yeah, so just another crop. Well, it's sort of like a chemical crop, like poppies are, where they're extracting a chemical from it.
Yep. Good.
So with all the different agronomists coming on, obviously that makes organising your spray schedule a bloody nightmare.
Yep.
Having selective herbicides going on certain crops that'll kill another crop. So I'm also a spray contractor. So we do our place as well as about 3 other local farmers in the area.
Yep.
All the agronomists are using AgWorld as part of their platform to write recs out. So having that platform meant that I didn't have to have the paperwork in the cab, and I could manage my spray day a lot easier because it all came to the one, you know, it's all there on the iPad in front of you.
Yep.
Rather than trying to gather so many recs together, all paper recs that end up getting lost or filthy dirty because you've got muddy boots or whatever else is going on.
Yeah. How's it work as a contractor using Ag World? Do you go on and utilize their dashboard?
So I've got a different subscription for my contractor.
Yeah.
Obviously my contractor clients. So that means that I can have multiple farms on there with all the paddock names and where the paddocks actually are, because that's half the battle, is knowing where you're actually going and making sure you're spraying the right paddock. Like obviously when you come to onions, you might go in there 18 times. I think pyrethrum's a horrendous one. That's about 22 times. There's a lot of work getting everything right, but you've also got to then keep the records for the QA systems that go on behind the scenes as well. And by having, by entering the recs as you're going, converting a recommendation to an actual, completed job just makes it so much easier, because while you're waiting for your spray rig to fill up, you can just be entering in, what your spray rate's going to be, what chemicals you've used, what the rates are. You can double check the labels, all on that one platform. You've also got access to all your MSDSs, which they were a real nightmare before AgWorld, because you used to have printout copies in the spray shed. So we'd have two booklets that were probably about this deep in size, just trying to keep the QA guys happy. But now it's all on the one platform, it's a lot easier. So and then you can also then put in the weather conditions once you're doing the job.
Yeah.
And then that also then covers your ass when somebody says, oh, you're spraying in the unfavorable weather. Well, you can say, no, I actually was spraying at this time, and this is what the local weather station said. So you've sort of got that bit of ass covering going on as well.
Yeah, definitely. I think the sooner a farmer reduces their paper clutter and goes for digital record keeping, especially for spraying and how you're dealing with different people all the time, and you're going into your paddock 22 times for certain crops, that makes it like that communication, probably reducing the communication is probably one of the best, the value that comes from AgWorld, would you not?
Absolutely. And it also helps the agronomists out.
Yeah.
Because they have access to, or, you can limit to whatever access you want your agronomist to have.
Yep.
But even if it's just a view access, they can actually see, did you actually get that rec on when they told you to get that on, or are you two recs behind? And do they need to do a review on another rec that you haven't got onto yet? So therefore, they've sort of got a bit of an idea of where they're actually at in their own mind for the paddock that they're meant to be looking after. So it sort of helps, because like you say, with communication, it's they can log on, see exactly where the paddock is, see that the weather hasn't been favourable, you haven't got the rec on that they thought was on, and they can then make a modification and say, oh, we can up the rate now because the plants are a bit bigger.
Yeah, definitely, just what you want. For yourself though, like how AgWorld, what are three things that you have seen that's improved your efficiencies and productivity as a team on farm there?
Yeah, well, I would say some of the planning that you can go in behind the scenes. You can do your next year's rotation, or like we're normally two or three rotations in front of ourselves all the time, which then makes planning for, say, putting in cover crops, that type of thing, a lot easier, because you can then start organising your seed that you need when you aren't busy.
Yep.
To make sure you've got it ready to go when you want it. Also, even just ordering chemicals for the season, you can sort of, do a report on your chemical usage, and it will then show you how much chemical you used on all your crops. And if you're still growing that same area, then you know that you can sort of put a bit of an order in for, say, 80% of your chemical, and know that you've got that up your sleeve ready to go without having to go down, chasing a whole heap of invoices through all the different chemical suppliers to find out how many litres of glyphosate you used, or how many litres of spray seed or any of those products. It's all there on AgWorld. And then the other thing that's really nice is the snapshot that they provide. So with all our paddocks, we've probably got about 15 to 20 different paddocks. You can quickly open up the paddock, click on the snapshot. You can see the agronomy snapshot, or you can see the financial snapshot. So you know exactly how much dollars you've spent per hectare on growing that crop to the current date.
Yep.
which is quite critical to know when, like, especially on the growing, like, vegetable growing side of things, prices can, you know, really destroy your gross margins very quickly if you're not on top of them. And you can quite easily see, you know, am I overspending on my fertilizer budget? Am I overspending on some fungicides? Do I need to start, you know, going into some cheaper ones? Or just keeping an eye on everything, really, so that way you know whether or even some of the crops start to become unviable to grow because there's not enough dollars in them compared to the inputs that have gone up.
Yeah, I've seen that, like, right across the board. Turner Smith from Bundaberg, who's running macadamias and is seeing the same impact of what you're having, but with completely different crops as well.
Yeah, that's it. And I think that's critical going into the future. Like, I know that we've been doing some budgets, which I've just sort of been getting my head around how the ag world budgets are working. Yep. And I haven't really played with them before, but now that we've got one from last year, which I could then make a duplicate copy of and just lift the prices of what everything was going to be. And it really shocked me on what our wheat gross margins were looking at being just by, if I ran exactly the same program as last year, just with the rising input costs, I realised there was going to be another $800 a hectare or even up to $1,000 a hectare spent on getting exactly the same crop as this year, which then starts to really make you think, well, what can I cut out of this to keep the margins where they need to be?
Yeah, it just makes it that little bit more simpler to find these trends, whether they're good or bad ones, so you can optimise like what you're doing on your farm and just really get the details down on your efficiencies and so we can become a bit more productive, because our margins are quite low and we need to be able to save ourselves as well.
Yeah, that's right, exactly. So,
AgWorld connects growers, their staff, agronomists and contractors on one easy-to-use farm management platform. By capturing farm data on AgWorld, users have key information at their fingertips at all times for managing a more data-driven, efficient and profitable farm business. Contact AgWorld today to find out more.
And back to the episode. For yourself, as like one of the challenges with ag tech in Australia and probably across the world as well, for farmers and adopting the different platforms that might be working for them, after showcasing that value is quite hard. How did you come across AgWorld, and like what was your reasons for adopting it in the first place?
Yeah, well, like I say, the previous version that we were using was a different platform, and like I say, it wasn't user friendly. Like you couldn't use it in the middle of your farm. Yeah. We looked at quite a few different options before we went down the AgWorld line, and a lot of them didn't quite suit our high cropping our high cropping system. And AgWorld seemed to cope with that. And I also like the fact that it's available now. It's you know, you can really, if you put all your data in correctly, you get very, very good you know, cost of productions out of AgWorld.
Yeah.
And I think that was the main thing was the usability while in your tractor or in the spray shed. Yeah. Because I've only got one full-time fella that works for us, we sort of haven't quite played with the work orders just yet, but that's something that we're going to look into this coming season, setting work orders out of where paddocks need to be worked or jobs that need to be done. And then we'll hopefully have a bit of an idea of what that looks like in sort of 12 months' time and how that runs.
That would reduce the level of communication you'd need. So he would just wake up and go do his job and just look down at the work order. Is that how, like, you would want to roll it out to replace a meeting?
Yeah, I think either sort of like that, or even just have a schedule of, because most of the time, because we are such small paddocks, it's all very intense all the time. We never really get a break from doing what we're doing. It might be able to prioritise some things that other people wouldn't see as a priority. But if you've put certain dates in there or put reminders in that this has to be done by this date, means that he doesn't go and do something different first. I reckon that's probably where we'd see the benefit mostly.
Yeah, I think prioritising bit of an issue right across agriculture, I suppose, and what we're trying to dial down on our own family farm as well. Just try what's the money makers and what's not, I suppose.
Yeah, that's right. Yep, exactly.
Every other industry has deadlines and that they need to meet, and that's where they get their sales across the line, and that's our sale, getting the commodity off and improving it as well as farmers. But
yeah,
for yourself, what would you tell another farmer that's looking like is just purely paper-based currently? They're looking to find something. They're not quite sure what to go for. What would you say to them to get them across the line or add the other side of actually utilising it?
Yeah, it is quite a funny topic really, because once you start going paperless and online, like it just seems such a no-brainer to do.
Yeah.
Yet there is still so many farmers on the Northwest Tas that don't see the value in in a digital platform. Yeah. And they're still using spray diaries. And like I've just said to them, like, bottom line is I just hate filling out forms with a pen. I'm also left-handed, so therefore I smudge everything I write anyway.
In the club.
So it's just, you know, and everything gets dirty because because that's just what paper likes, attracting dirt, and it just looks messy and horrible. And you can't do any reporting. So if you need to do any reporting or see, you've got to then put that into a computer through an Excel program or you add it up in columns and it's very, you know, like ancient old school technology really. But the problem is so many people are just not tech savvy or don't want to do it, but it's actually not that hard. And I would say hopefully with the way people have all got smartphones now and they've got more apps on them and they're using them more regularly, hopefully it'll become a no-brainer to just move on to it. I know one of the things that probably some of the farmers on the Northwest don't quite want to go down that system, and that's probably, you know, sometimes the cost can put a downer on it.
Yep.
Because they might only run, say, you know, 100 acres of crop a year, which you sort of think, well, do you get a value, you know, if you've got to spend $2,000 for a program and you've only got 100 acres, that's quite a few dollars per acre that you, or per hectare that you've got to, you know, as an actual ongoing cost for running a program. And maybe there could be a vegetable growers one or even just a size, you know, if you've only got 100 hectares, then you get a discount on the rate. Might be a way to pick up more farmers in Tassie anyway, because there's probably hundreds of farmers they could pick up. And it's not like you could lie about it, because you've always got your paddock sizes and your maps that are already pre-designed and pre-mapped out. So it's not like you can fool the system, because you'd rely on the paddocks being that size.
Yeah, but you'd be a bit sus if a 100,000 acre farm was just said it was a 100 hectare farm or something like that.
Yeah, that's right, exactly. So you wouldn't be able to. I think that could be one thing that does hold a few of the farmers back, is that they don't want that, you know, to get that across the line. They $2,000 to them on 100 acre or 100 hectares is probably quite a bit.
Yeah. Understandable. And that leads me into the next question of what you saw AgWorld could adapt onto, like, to further improve your farm. Was that one of the things that you thought would be good?
Yeah. Well, I know that, like, we've got quite a few, you know, a fair bit of machinery.
Yep.
And like, we're probably overcapitalized, like every single farm is, but because we've got the 1200 mils of rain a year, therefore timeliness of working ground and sowing is quite critical, and therefore you end up buying machinery to do the job that you need to do in a timely manner. So we have quite an array of you know, of vehicles and also implements.
Yeah.
But it would be nice if maybe there was a that sort of a section on AgWorld that could actually do maintenance scheduling, or you could just enter in all your tractors and then put in when you've done a service and when the next service is due, maybe all the filter numbers, you know, just having a bit of a fleet, well, not really a fleet recording system, but just an electronic recording system rather than, you know, in the workshop, you just got to scrap your bit of paper or a notebook that you jot down to try and keep records of.
Yeah.
You could actually have it on your phone when you go to get the filters. You can actually say, well, these are the filters I need, because they're on the phone when you're at the store getting them. And again, for the implements, you could, you know, if some of the implements are running a yearly service, you can actually have them pre-entered in there and you can tick it off every year you do the service. Just say service done.
Yeah,
that'd be quite a.
All farmers would love that. That's also sort of paper based and also mind based. Of, geez, when did I last service the tractor, or what's the filter? Do I have one on stock, or have to go get one mid harvest as well?
Yeah, that's right. Exactly. So
stop you chasing your tail.
Yeah, that's right, and also just be able to keep an electronic record of it, and not only that, the employees would be able to see. The thing as well, because quite often we've got, you know, my one fella, he drives one tractor that's his all the time. Well, when there's an issue with that, I only know about it when I go to drive the tractor and I go, oh, the windscreen wiper blade's buggered on it again. You know, it could be something that he could just fill out and say, oh, there's an issue here, or there's a bit of an oil leak here. It could be sort of kept a little bit more on top of, I suppose.
Yeah, definitely. I think like some farmers would look at that like nitpicking, but I think the more you dial down and more efficient you get, it's going to be better for both the employee and just becomes a bit more seamless, doesn't it? Coming right into the system.
And it's not like the employee's forgotten to do it. It's just that he's thought about it at that time and then he's moved on with another job, and therefore he's just forgotten to tell me that's an issue. And he knows it's an issue, because as soon as he gets in it, he knows it's an issue. But if you're working a paddock and you know there's some issues, well, you can probably even jot the issues down in the, you know, on the app as a bit of a note to remind you when you do get a wet day that you can sort of work on a few of these things.
Yeah, it sounds to me that you need your windscreen wipers down in Tassie.
That's right. That's the critical one.
Yeah, well, the next question was how you were tackling labour issues within Tasmania, but it sounds like you're pretty well off down there, just using your one full-time employee. Don't need extras for our harvest.
No, not really, because we sort of use a few subcontractors that have got some trucks. Like I say, we're a very different system. So I do run a bit of a grain pool for the local guys, and we sell direct to some dairy farmers.
Yep.
Which is all contracted. And the I think there's 12 farmers in the grain pool, and they're all within about 40 kilometres of our depot. And because a lot of the paddocks are only small, it's not worth having a big chaser bin or a mother bin. So therefore, I have a lot of tandem trucks that hold about 12 to 14 tonne,
yep.
Which is exactly two fills with my grain tank. So most of the trucks sit in the paddock for maybe 15 minutes.
Yep.
So we just use, like say, just tandem trucks, which we've sort of got about three or four local tandem trucks in the area that we use. Though, and then after the wheat's done, they then go on to spud carting. So that's why we're using them in their downtime.
Yep.
So that's where my labour, you know, force comes into it with harvest. But I know there's a lot of fruit picking that goes on in the area. There's a lot of dairy farmers in the area that are using. Obviously have to use labour to milk cows and also pick fruit from the berries. And I know that they certainly have been struggling to find people this year. They haven't had the backpackers that there would be like normal. And they've had to rely on a lot more of the local labour, and sometimes that local labour is probably not as skilled as you'd like them to be.
Yeah.
So...
But yeah, it sounds like you're very well handled in that way, and it's great to see like you can get the job done. It sounds like you must have a fair bit of equipment to get it done, covering all of those crops come harvest time. And it's also great to dive into your operation. Thanks for doing so. Appreciate not all farmers want to dive into the operation, but it's good to see. For yourself, though, piece of farms advice for anyone wanting to improve their own land care by utilising different technologies like AgWorld, how would you go about that? What would be your advice?
I would just say that starting off by just keeping basic records on a digital platform would be a good start. But it all comes down to you just come back to basics, basically. Just be timely on your applications, get things in the ground when they need to get into the ground, harvest when things are ready to harvest. It's surprising how many people fail, not because they're bad farmers, it's because they're just bad time managers.
Yeah.
So many people just either put things off too late or they don't get things done when it needs to be done, and that's as basic as you can get. All the extra stuff of record keeping and time management or even just knowing what you've got to do is you know, that's fine tuning all of that and making that simpler. But if you start gathering all these things together, and like I would say, like if you can't get an average crop now, I'd be looking at back to basics. If you're getting average crops now and you want to take the next step up, then that's where your precision ag stuff then comes in, like your grid sampling, because they're only sort of a 5 or 10% gain on what you know, you could do all the precision ag in the world, but if you don't put your chemical applications on time, then you're never going to, you know, get the gains that you should be getting. So I just say that, you know, start with basics, get the basics right. Once you're ready to move on from the basics, then start looking down the precision ag lines and starting to get more technical.
Yeah, I think that time management is plenty of scope right across Australia for farmers to improve it, optimise. You don't have to be working 24 hours in a day, 24/7. But if you're working when it matters, getting the job done and utilising the tools in your toolbox, may it be your neighbour or a piece of ag tech as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, that's the full system.
Definitely. Well, Michael, thanks for coming on to the Farm Advice podcast and joining us for Beyond Record Keeping series with AgWorld. Sounds like you're utilising the tools in the toolbox pretty well and you're not a bad operator yourself down in Tasmania.
No, thank you very much.
Thank you. And for anyone that wants to like watch on Red Bank Farming, how can we do so? Are you online, Twitter?
Yeah, I am online. I'm my Twitter is at mdnichols541, and I'm also on Facebook, which is just Michael Nichols. But I'm probably not as good at entering stuff into it because I'm always too bloody busy to be doing it, or I think about it and then I forget to actually upload it. I think that's probably one thing I could probably improve a little bit more on and get some good. I think the industry needs good stories out there, and yeah, I think the social media thing is something that we could probably improve on and get some good stories, you know, out there and what's actually going on the farm as well.
Yeah, I think Twitter's a really good one for farmers asking questions, understand what's happening in the world. It's really good.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So,
anyway, beautiful. Thank you very much for coming on. We'll talk to you further down the line, no doubt.
Thank you for tuning in to the Farms Advice podcast. It is produced by Advertrise Digital, the agribusiness marketing specialist. Go to farmsadvice.com.au for more information on this episode and the others before, and spread the Farms Advice. If you love this episode, please give us a review on Apple Podcasts and subscribe, as it helps other farmers find us too. But until then, next Tuesday, keep on farming. In the spirit of reconciliation, the Farms Advice podcast acknowledges the traditional custodians of country for Australia and their connections to land, sea, and community. We pay our respect to their elders past and present and extend that respect to all Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples today.